Hell Yes Life, episode 14.
I was, and I am still, a dyslexic, and reading and writing was such a difficult thing for me at a young age that music gave me that ability to break out of that shell. And it circumnavigated so many of the different things that I wanted to do in my life, which was, one, talk about people and my life experience, other people's life experience. It connects me to people as a result of that. I get to travel all over the world and talk to people and sing and play music to people. I've had the privilege of meeting so many incredible other people that, you know, to me are like, oh my God, Herbie Hancock or whoever it is that I've had a chance to meet. All as a part of this wonderful experience that is like, well, you know, that's really why I wanted to do it, other than trying to make it a commodity or make a living from it.
Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, the show that helps you come alive so you can live a hell yes life. I'm your host, Norman Bell. Hey everybody, Norman Bell here. Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, where you will hear inspiring stories and actionable tips from our amazing guests that will motivate you to move towards your Hell Yes Life. If this is your first time listening, hell yes, I'm glad you can join us. The Hell Yes Life podcast releases new episodes every Tuesday, and show notes can be found at hellyeslife.com. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. And please join the Hell Yes Life private Facebook group, which you can access from hellyeslife.com. Also, a special announcement. Stick around to the end of this episode with musician Ed Roman. We've been given permission to feature Ed's new single, I Am Love, in its entirety, and I think you're going to love it. Now, let's get into today's episode. Hey there, Hell Yes Lifers. Today, my guest is Ed Roman. Now, I'm super excited. Ed is an award-winning singer-songwriter, performer, and multi-instrumentalist from Shelburne, Ontario in Canada. Ed is an award-winning musician and a top 100 MTV.com artist, and he has performed at the Red Gorilla Music Fest during South by Southwest in Austin and at the Millennium Music Conference. Ed's music ranges from pop, rock, folk, and country music, and this mix of music has earned numerous fans from around the world who call themselves, apparently, Edheads. Yes, that's right, Edheads. I think I might be an Edhead now too, actually, after listening to his music. Now, Ed has a brand new album. It's called Red Omen. And listen for the question that I have for him about that. Ed Roman's album, Red Omen, which was produced by renowned producer Michael Jack, who has worked with, among others, Bono, Nelly Furtado, and Olivia Newton-John. So he's in very good company. The album features the single I Am Love, and you'll get a chance to hear that song in its entirety if you stick around to the end of this podcast. Now, in our conversation, among other things, we talk about how Ed's upbringing on a farm influenced him, how he was inspired by meeting Herbie Hancock when he was 14 years old, how he struggled with dyslexia as a youth but found music as a channel to communicate, and how a meeting with Bunny Wailer of Bob Marley and the Wailers in the West Indies affected him and what he learned from Bunny. I'm super excited to share this conversation with Ed with you, so hell yes, let's get to it. Ed Roman, welcome, welcome. How are you doing today?
Well, Norman, I'm quite well. How are you today, my friend?
I am doing just great. Now, Ed, are you ready to tell us about your Hell Yes life?
Hell yes!
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Great, Ed. We're off to a good start. So I always like to start by asking people the question, what is your Hell Yes? And by that, I mean, what's your passion? What's the thing that really makes you come alive?
Well, as cliche or corny as it may sound, Norman, life, I mean, and living it. To me, I mean, there's so many things that in the 21st century are so incredible, you know, in terms of communication, the way that we can talk to one another, share information. It's alarmingly, like, amazing. It staggers me sometimes. And at the same time, I'm also a very big proponent of sort of releasing myself from some of what that umbilical cord seems to be a lot of the time for so many of us, whether it's our smartphones or continually engaging in social media or just even upkeep of what all that represents in our own lives, because we use it so often for our jobs and, you know, the things that we do with our lives. But when I'm out doing other things that are far more tactical with my hands. I mean, I'm a gardener. I'm always talking about gardening. I came from a big family of farming people and cattlemen. And I see this sort of detachment being important as I like to refer to myself, an animal, to engage in this sort of healthy kind of, I don't know, to me it's very nurturing, it's very mother-like, it doesn't necessarily reflect being a man or a woman, it's just more or less participating in these things that make our life good and healthy and keep us healthy, mentally, physically, how we consume, what we consume. And to me, when I do that, Norman, I engage in other things that show me a bigger picture in terms of what life really represents. And that gives me that hell yes moment and feeling when I'm doing those things, or I'm retrieving the victory of what those labors are after, you know, you've planted a great garden and I'm still eating carrots and potatoes and, you know, growing lettuce in my garage. And to me, having that sort of, I can do it, is really what pushes me. And then it has so many other, you know, tentacles of things that go into different aspects of my life and philosophy and art. And so it's that activator of it and the realization of it that makes everything, it doesn't matter what you're really, you know, hung up on or really passionate about, it pushes that even further as a result.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I really identify with that, what you were just saying about, oh, you know, it's great that we have all this technology that we can connect with each other with, but to really take a break from that stuff and interact with the three-dimensional world out here, you know, and that can, you know, we can spend so much time interacting with a two-dimensional screen that we forget that we're three-dimensional beings in a three-dimensional world. So I really appreciate that. I wanted to ask, I thought your answer, I was almost not going to even ask because I thought you were going to say, well, music, and I love music, and here's all this thing. But no, you'd actually talked about life, you talked about gardening, and you did mention your art there. But tell us a little bit about how you first connect, you know, how long have you been a musician, and when did you connect with, I mean, obviously, would you say that's one of your hell yeses, is music?
Well, yes. And that's, I guess, what maybe I was confused in the question is that what was it that drove me to this point that I've now pursued as my life? It's a lifestyle, living an artistic life. You need to be artistic in your way of thinking about it. It came from all of those very basic things that I was mentioning, because we grew up on a farm. Mm-hmm. We had cattle. We had a big garden. We had 1,500 head of cattle, of dairy cattle and beef cattle that we raised. Wow. And it was always very active. But see, the thing is, again, with the technology comment, here was, you know, we had, what, 3 TV stations and one of those record players that looked like a suitcase. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people fought for radio time and record player time. All that early enthusiasm that I saw in people when it came to music, what they were saying, the incidents that occurred. I remember coming home from grade school and, like, people in my family in the kitchen crying because John Lennon had been shot, you know, or like Elvis Presley had died. I saw the impact that music and art had, and I went, you know what? There's got to be something more to this, like, other than it being like, you know, you're on a stage and you're selling records. But the other factor is that I was – and I am still a dyslexic, and reading and writing was such a difficult thing for me at a young age that music gave me that ability to break out of that shell. And it circumnavigated so many of the different things that I wanted to do in my life, which was, one, talk about people my life experience, other people's life experience. It connects me to people as a result of that. I get to travel all over the world and talk to people and sing and play music to people. I've had the privilege of meeting so many incredible other people that, you know, to me are like, oh my God, Herbie Hancock or whoever it is that I've had a chance to meet, all as a part of this wonderful experience that is like, well, you know, that's really why I wanted to do it other than trying to make it a commodity or make a living from it. Mm-hmm. Because to me, it's like, you know, I'm mentioning Herbie, but somebody once gave me two Jaco Pastorius records many years ago when I was a kid, because I started playing the bass and that's my principal instrument. But on the back of that record, Herbie wrote, and I took it with such gravity at the age of 14, the definition of an artist is one who has the ability to fuse their life with the rhythm of the times. Mm. And for me, you know, people say, well, if you don't make any money from it, how do you feel about that? Or if you're not winning awards, how do you feel about that? I've always created art and music as a result of my own necessity of pulling myself through these moments in my life. And they're more like, you know, jotted down life experiences or things that I've gone through, tumultuous moments in my life, moments of great elation, sadness, happiness, whatever it may be, because I figured, you know, Norman, we're all human. We're all going through these emotional bell curves in our lives. And at a very young age, I feel like it behooves me to do this. And I was encouraged to do it because of the struggle that I had with learning and reading and writing. It was like, well, Ed's got this kind of thing that he can do. So it also gave me a new understanding of who I was as a person. It empowered me in some way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Excellent, excellent. So I always like to ask our guests a challenge that you faced in your life. You were just talking about one already about some challenges with dyslexia, and that music kind of gave you that avenue to express yourself and communicate with the world. Now, can you talk, whether it was with that or something else, is there something that comes to mind that, you know, whether it was earlier in your life or not, that was like a challenge that you faced, some obstacles, and you either figured out how to overcome those challenges or you learned a lesson from them?
Well, I mean, that's always happening, especially when you're living and working on a farm or even working in a dynamic environment like the music industry, because it's always changing and you're always re-navigating. But, you know, I know you've talked to Michael, my manager, and I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I'm no baby in the industry when it comes to playing in bands, being on the road, touring with people, writing. But in the last 3 years, I've really felt like I've come to my own in this connection, working with somebody like Mike who believes in what I'm doing. I feel this personal victory at this point in my life where I know you're asking me for something even earlier, but see, for me, it's like every tune I write is a personal victory because I feel like I've gotten through something. But when you really get to see what your ideas are about and then come to fruition in some kind of a way, it's such a beautiful and overwhelming experience because I feel like I've changed as a person. Not like Ed's different. He's not the same cat. He doesn't garden anymore. It has nothing to do with that. It's just more this overwhelming sense of confidence that I feel like I should have always had. Like even, you know, in my music, I might even question my own confidence about stuff. That's natural as a human being to do those kinds of things. It's healthy to do that. But realizing that in a way that makes you go, oh, hey, I am this. it's an overwhelmingly beautiful feeling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Well, can you also tell us about somewhere along the road where you felt like you had kind of a breakthrough success? So, you know, whether it was the first club you played, the first album you put out, or just a moment where you thought, oh, I think I'm finally getting somewhere with this.
It was, you know, it's funny because I always mark like music and growth points in my life. I think it's like with anything, you know, you start out with a passion and you go, well, I started doing this and then I went to here in the job and then I started, you know, working the executive office and now I'm the CEO or whatever it might be. To me, you know, I guess those breakthrough moments were starting to realize that I had these moments of great acceptance in peer groups that I had revered. They were, when I was in college, I mean, I went, I'm 18. I don't know if I can get into college this young. And it was when they were changing the sort of educational program systems of OACs and accredited programs to get into college and university earlier in Canada and Ontario. So all of a sudden I get into college and I'm really young and everybody's so much older than I am, but I had this like, oh, I'm playing with guys in the second and third year and I'm accepted. All of a sudden I was like, oh, my abilities, the things that I've been, you know, in my room or in the basement working on for hours and hours are actually starting to seem like, not that they're paying off, but that recognition for like, hey, come on and hang out. Let's do this. Let's converse musically. It gave me this, again, this like a notch in the belt feeling where I was like, I'm moving forward and I like it.
You know, and that's the thing about your hell yes, right? Like when you find that thing that really lights you up and makes you come alive, and you do that, it gives you confidence in all the other areas of your life, wouldn't you say?
I would totally say, because and music has sort of illustrated that for me when here I am with a guy 40 years my age on a gig and he comes up to me and goes, you know, how did you know that tune? And I'm like, oh, wow, I like it. And I thought it was really tricky in a way, but clever. And I really wanted to try to learn it. I wanted to try to get my fingers to learn it. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, you know, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, because it's not just the respect of that person, but realizing that, you know, I'm following something in a respectful way.
That is great. That is great. Yeah, that must be a great feeling when somebody you really respect comes up to you and says, hey, how did you know how to do that?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, let's take it up to the present a little bit. So you have your latest album, Red Omen, that came out. And I was listening to that this weekend and love the songs on there. But I was thinking of the title. And now, is that a play on words of your name, Ed Roman, Red Omen?
Absolutely, Norman. Okay. And as we discussed with the whole dyslexic thing, I thought, you know what? Once again, hell yes, another negative into a positive.
Right? Oh, absolutely. That's awesome. That's awesome. Red O.
And the other thing is, I mean, as a dyslexic, I mean, you spend so much time trying to understand, first of all, how to pronounce the word, see it, say it. And then as a consequence, in some ways, your vocabulary and in a photographic memory kind of way, develops, and I've become fascinated with language, and it's another sort of twist into why the record is really an anagram of my own name, because I see language changing. I mean, in the 21st century, so much of what we can identify as a statement is proclaimed in an emoticon of some kind or something like that. And I was listening to this gentleman that was an IT expert that was like, he spent 30 years of his hobbyist life working on the cartouches that were in Egypt and originally based off of some of the studies that were done off of the Rosetta Stone. And he started to realize that the cartouches were not just singular shapes and symbols that created the singular word, but they had far more meaning as an acronym inside of what they actually meant. So now these cartouches, to some Egyptologists, are taking on sort of new meanings. And I see that almost happening. And he made this prolific statement. He said, that's kind of what's happening in our language today, where we're going back to this baseline, you know, iconographical symbolism in our language, as opposed to being, you know, fluidic and sort of describe things in sort of a colorful way in our language. And I was like, I was blown away from it. I mean, that's even why the front cover of the record is just a rooster. It is the iconographical symbol of the record.
And what does the rooster mean to you?
Hell yes. Well, you know, I grew up on a farm. We had chickens, and in the morning, you know, when you wake up from a dream, you know, you can hear the rooster. Even in the middle of the night, sometimes you hear the rooster. And for me, it's like a wake-up call. There's so many things going on in our world that offer us the option of duality. And I think it has something to do more with, you know, the good and bad choices that we all have the option of being able to make, some without choice and some with choice. Even that's why I used red. Red is a duality color. When, you know, we have the month of love approaching, and it is the symbol of love, right? But at the same time, every time we get to a Four Corners, we see a red light. Stop. It's a warning sign. It's a warning color. These are frequencies, and they all make us feel a certain way. But again, it sort of represents that aspect of choice. Again, it is both of these things. And how do we amalgam them in concept in order to be able to see a bigger picture? And the rooster is filled with all this mandala-esque like kind of drawing that every time you kind of look at it, artist Dave Bagley from Toronto did it, you see something different. And the base of the entire rooster itself is a heart. And that's really what the record's trying to pump. It's trying to push a big love button. Yes. And talk more about, you know, trying to understand each other before we wield weapons, you know.
Absolutely. So, and well, I'll have to take a closer look at that rooster. That sounds really interesting. And I didn't see the heart, so I'll have to go back and look. So basically your album is a big, like you said, a big love button, right? So, and your single off the album is I Am Love. So I'd like to hear a little bit about the, kind of your inspiration for that song. And I wanted to, there was one lyric in there. I was writing down a couple of lyrics, and I feel like some of the stuff that you're writing about is particularly pertinent in this day and age. We're in a particularly crazy time. I don't want to gloss over the fact that we're in kind of a crazy time here in the United States and in Canada as well.
Absolutely. It's all over the world. It's, I think it's something that's international.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that song, there's a line where you said, at least it was in the extended version. I'm not sure if it's in the shortened version, but it said, go up and hug your worst enemy and say, I love you. So tell me more about that. It's kind of interesting in this time, day and age, there's so many people that are like, well, I'm blue, you're red. You know, I can't understand you. And it's really hard to think of like, wow, should I go up? Maybe I should go up to that person and give them a big hug and tell them I love you.
It's the hardest thing to be the bigger person or the bigger man in situations or however you want to look at it. And I think that is the ultimate defying diffuser. As even I've put myself in that position and been in that position where I may be the one that is the one in need of the hug because I seem like the accuser or whatever it is. But that's the thing about the human condition. I think it's the realization of the moment. What is happening? And how do we change what this is in that regard? And it's funny. I was like, I've been spending a lot of time when I am lucky enough to be in the West Indies. And I was fortunate enough to meet Bunny Wailer, the last singing surviving member of Bob Marley and the Wailers. Wow. And when I met him, it was amazing. Harold, listen. But we had this great conversation. I remember we were starting to get into this like governmental thing and this sort of division between black and white. He went, no, there is no black. There is no white. There is no division. He just went, there is a Chinese man, a Jamaican person, a Mexican person. There's a Canadian person. We are all people. We all have. He was trying to define basically the world as this garden, you know, and the garden isn't arguing with itself. Basically, it just grows and it sustains itself. So that's what I was trying to do with that statement is try to look for a diffuser. And even in the bridge of that tune as well, I was like, that's something my grandmother would say to me a lot of the time. She would say, look, it's not what you believe. It's what you do. The actions that you portray have far more gravity sometimes than the words that you speak. We can all speak these words, but how do we take action upon them? Otis Redding said, actions speak louder than words, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's what it is. And when I have done that or let go of something that I know has been a slap in the face on that level, or I've been taken advantage of, I've released myself from what it is. It already is what it is. I can't change what has happened. But what I can do is recalibrate how I feel about it and hopefully reamplify a better feeling around that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love this conversation. I think it's so kind of pertinent to the moment. If you don't mind, just to go down that road a little bit without getting too political, it's just kind of like, I think we're in a point here in the U.S., many of us, where we're maybe not in complete support of what's going on from out of Washington, D.C. And there's, you know, thousands of people in the streets and so forth. And I think that that, you know, and I was out there last night myself. And you know, I think that that's good to say, you know, we're not for this, but it's kind of like, how do you show up for something like that where you don't want to be in denial of things that are happening? You also don't want to be, you know, kind of clenched down and in resistance. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that? Like, how do you show up in life for things like this?
Well, you know what? Look, my dad was a public servant. He was mayor of our township for 30 years. He was the first coalition candidate ever in history of federal politics in Canada. Mm-hmm. Ran as an independent, won chairman of York Region for 6 years, police commissioner for 14. My dad hated the word politics. Mm-hmm. He saw so much collusion and what he would call, you know, the payoff. From people coming into his office as mayor, asking him to run provincially or federally just to defuse votes, all sorts of money laundering that was going on a federal level that was being done by elected public officials. The thing that is disturbing about what's going on in Canada and the United States, and it's easier to see it because it's like a big bright light, what's going on in the United States right now. what the public has to realize is that the people that they elect are public servants. Mm-hmm. They are there to serve the public. When a government starts telling people that this is what is right for you, and the populace has the vote to be able to say this. This is what is alarmingly strange to me about politics, is that through the kinetic aspect of what politics represents, from municipality to the state to the federal level, in Canada it's the provincial level, regardless, it has to work this way, that the people's needs and their ideas that need to be supported get translated. The problem is, on a state and federal level, there is so much lobbyistic behavior and backroom politics that go on that extend over a really long period of time. It makes it very easy for the public to be lost in the semantical, like you so eloquently put, the red, blue, this is my opinion, this is your opinion, nobody can come to a decision. And as a result, all of this crazy and these antics and the behavior that come through these changes that occur alarm the public. And they should be out there protesting. They should be saying, I don't agree with this. That is their right. They have a voice to be able to do that. I have no time for anybody that is out there damaging public things or breaking windows or hurting the public in any way. But the public has a right to be out there to say, this is our disdainment, we don't agree with it, and to really sort of illustrate or recalibrate what the populace and the true vote it really is. And I'm not saying it has anything to do with voting and voting machines or anything like that, but regardless, it's like, no, it's important for people to not get lost. You know, again, all that anxiety of it, because that's really then how it becomes efficient and the way it, you know, works. It then festers and it becomes very unhealthy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a really powerful moment. And I, just to say, you know, I was out there last night, and what I find to be effective and satisfying for me is to be with other people, you know, like just grinding away, looking at Facebook and the news it doesn't really light me up too much, but being out there with other people saying, yeah, hey, we all feel this way. It's empowering. So
110%. You're totally right. Because when you start to realize that there's so much other coloring to, you know, the media in terms of the way they present information or go on and on about it, that, yeah, when you get on, you're like, hey, even if you're in a negative frame of mind about it, at least you have somebody to commiserate with or to talk about it or to go through it and discuss it. It's so important to talk to people around you.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Speaking of doing things, I wanted to pivot to talking about some of the work that you've done, some humanitarian work. Now, I was reading that you traveled to Jamaica and you were involved in delivering like humanitarian aid to the island when you were there to shoot a video for your single Jamaica. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, we've been there a number of years ago, and we met so many people at this little resort that we stayed at. The reality of it was that we were lucky enough to take the heroic leap and go out and experience the island the way that the island really is. And, you know, we started to see, my gosh, you know, our friends that are musicians or gardeners or chefs or cooks or whatever here at this resort, they're pretty much working from 5:30 in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. They make, I don't know, maybe $130 American in a fortnight every 2.5 weeks kind of a thing. And they go home sometimes to no electricity, no running water. It's really hard to move forward, you know, and to get to that next level. So as a result, my wife and I were like, well, you know, people are always, you know, can you send us something? Can you send us some yarn? People are very tactical there. They're always looking for things that they can use to build something or make something so they can resell it in some way, whether it be hats, clothes, it doesn't matter what it is. So the other things are just like, there's so many old electronics or stuff that people have in their garages that they can't get rid of. So what we did is we found a company here, Leparcan in Canada, and they ship big 50-gallon drums of anything that you want, so long as it's not incendiary and explosive or flammable, no problem. And we fill these barrels and we ship them down. It takes longer, 4 to 6 weeks, but it goes by boat. And then they go to this little church that's there, the African Zionist Methodist Church, because we know one of the ministers there. And people come and they take things, whether it's soap or toothpaste, or all like even dollar store stuff. You know, when a dollar store has like a big sale, you know, we always encourage people, if you got the 5 bars of soap for a dollar, you know, buy one, we'll throw it in the barrel. Yeah. So we started telling people, friends, family, and people started bringing stuff to our house. So we started to ship it and people use it, and we see the benefits of it, whether, you know, it's food related stuff for kids now have shoes, you know, basic things that, you know, we take for granted, and we're, well, at least we're giving back in some kind of a way. And that's really what I was also trying to do with the video, was to show these other experiences that I have that are outside of the proverbial walls that really kind of make you go, wow, that wasn't on the beach. You know, by the swim up bar. No, because you kind of got to go out and meet people. Like you said, when you go out and you talk, and here I'm lucky enough to have an acoustic guitar and I'm going around singing and playing and teaching music to kids and stuff. It opens you up to that conversation and removes the fear and makes you realize this is what life is really all about.
Well, good on you for doing that. And yeah, I mean, Hell Yes Lifers that are listening to this, you know, it's just like staying open to like how can we help, right? And you know, it might be something like Ed did there, like he was just talking about in gathering things together and bringing them, you know, just listen for that inspiration that might guide you to how you can help, right? Now, Ed, I was wondering, you know, you're the first musician that I've had on this show. And to me, like being a musician, I'm never going to be a musician, but to me, that's just living the dream. You know, it's like, wow, you're touring around, you're meeting all these people, you're playing your music. It just seems like, what a great life. I'm sure your life has ups and downs like everybody, but, I'm wondering if you could, say anything to those listeners out there that might be interested in music. Like, you know, my wife, for example, she has a beautiful voice and she's always been trying to get up the gumption. And I know she will someday to go down to the jazz club for open mic night and belt one out. But, you know, like, so what advice, what any little tip you might have for someone who's on the other side of that divide who would love to, you know, live that life, but they're afraid.
Well, it's, you know, the artistic life is a tricky life to live. But like anything in our lives here, Norman, we have to be driven by our passions. We have to be somehow propelled. And, you know, I've read a lot of interesting books, philosophical books on like, well, how did you find your passion, or what's the little, what's the story behind this little metaphor that gets you to the next point. I've always realized, and it's even stuff that my grandparents had said to me, look, we don't care if you're a shoe salesman, if you're a rocket scientist, a brain surgeon, a musician, so long as you love what you're doing, then everything is okay. And I think that's the key. If you want to do that and try to follow it, be passionate about everything that you do. Fall in love with it in a way that most people don't. That's what you really have to do. Mm-hmm. Because it becomes more of a life mission for me, as I said, even if it's not something that I'm making a commodity or making a living at, I'm always creating art as a result of the necessity to do it. I've been driven by music that, you know, that a shiver up your back moment mm-hmm. you get from certain music that makes you go, hell yes. You know, like that's definitely something that I want to feel, and maybe I'm feeling this, and maybe, what do I have to say about it? You know, I think that's the most important thing, because I know too many people, and it's like when you're in college, you know, you're growing as a young artist or a player or whatever, and you're trying to sound like so-and-so. You're trying to play like so-and-so. You're learning all their material, and that's okay. We're all defined by our experiences in some way and our limitations. But once you allow yourself to be you, a whole new thing is created, a whole new expulsion of energy, and the way that a person would listen to it or perceive it changes, because it's coming from a very different place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, you heard that from Ed, Hell Yes Lifers. Look for, you know, just go for that authentic you, and the rest will unfold as it should. Well, so Ed, before we just want to start to wind down here, but I always like to ask our guests what their big vision is. So kind of turning towards the future now, and I have this term that I use, your cringeworthy vision. And so that doesn't mean cringeworthy like, oh, it's bad. It just means it's so big, it makes you cringe to think about sharing it. What is your big cringeworthy vision for your future?
So that is something that you actually wouldn't want anybody to know?
And now I'm giving you the opportunity to share it with our audience. So no pressure there. And if you don't want to do that, we don't have to.
Well, you know what? I'm really interested in like a lot of what you might say, hillbilly-esque and or like clandestine things. So at some point, I think I might like to start a distillery.
Awesome. A distillery.
Well, you know, I my grandfather used to make wine. He used to make, you know, like it's like a port wine. And this summer I got a little clever, and last summer with my wife, and we built a few little things and some apparatuses and a couple of pails of bananas and a few pails of apples later, and we made some pretty nice things. And I started to think, you know, aside from it just being like, oh, it was just a small operation and I wanted to try it just to see if I could do it, people would be like, why the hell would you want to do that? Like, it's somehow knowing that I can, and in a way it's outside of the realms of the circle. I kind of like that. That appeals to that rebel side of me. Maybe that's why I like reggae music, man, so much.
There you go. Well, and I can hear you lighten up a little bit when you're talking about that. It's like, yeah, I kind of like that. It's outside of the circle.
Right? Well, and it, for me too, it's like these things that, like, I mean, oh man, like it's know-how. That's what it comes down to more. It's not like I'm trying to like make $20,000 from something from my, you know, it has nothing to do with that. I just want to know that if I use my mind cleverly enough and I find what I need and gather it almost like a nut and gatherer of different parts and all the, can I do it? It's that same level that hell yes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you're like, we did it.
yeah, absolutely. Well, Ed, before we go, I want to ask if you have one tip or a quote or a resource that has helped you on your journey that you would like to share with our listeners.
Yeah. Well, there's so many of them, and I've heard a lot in the last couple of years that have really turned me on to, you know, new ways of thinking about stuff. But like, you know, Jim Mars, and I think this comes from an older quote too, and I'm sure Jim's quoting somebody else, but he once said, the mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. and I'm telling myself that, and when I, and because I always say, when I'm listening best is when I learn the most. So I think that's a big thing for me is remembering that, try to keep an open mind about stuff. And to tell you the truth, gardening and farming forces you to do that again. You got to like, well, no, this cow is going to move and you're moving with it. You have no choice. So think on your feet.
Yeah. Well, I have a vision in my mind of that open parachute, and then the opposite of that, like a closed parachute does not work very well. So yeah, a closed mind does not.
Yeah, and I think I've seen people have it on Zap photos too, and who knows where it really came from. But, and the other thing is, I guess there's another one, if I could slide it in, is one from my grandfather, and I've seen it, people use it in posts lately too, but dirty hands make clean money. My most recent video has that as the quote, and there's a line in it that's inspired through him because he would always say that. And I see that. I've known farmers that are millionaires that you wouldn't even know it because they got dirt under their fingernails, but they put their kids through school and they paid off their farm. And I think that says a lot about hard work and determination and looking after people. Farmers that are farming today do it because they want to.
Yeah.
Because there's a saying that says, if you can start a farm today, you can retire.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Well, that's a shout out, a hell yes to those farmers out there.
Hell yes.
Hell yes. Well, let's see. So, Ed, to close out our time, even though you just said hell yes, we're going to do it again together here. So on the count of three, are you ready to say hell yes together?
I am ready. Are we going on three, or is it like the four of three?
It'll be the four of three. So I'll say one, two, three, and then we'll say it. Okay.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Hell yes!
Oh, that was a good one. All right. Well, thanks so much, Ed. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
You too, Norman, and have a wonderful day. Thank you so kindly for the great chat.
Of an inch. supposed to be a singer.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you want to stay connected, visit hellyeslife.com and sign up for the e-newsletter and private Facebook group. Again, I'm Norman Bell. Thanks for joining me. Now let's get out there and live a hell yes life.